Welcome back to Holy Sisterhood, the podcast. My name is Brooklyn, and I have a special guest, Liza Ragsdale, here today. Liza, thank you so much for coming.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
You drove to get here. Yeah, you really put in the work. Sorry. Can you tell us, and we're just like kind of meeting today. Mm-hmm. Like, I think we've like been in the same room, but I don't know that we've ever like actually formally met. So introduce yourself to us.
Yeah. Like you said, my name's Liza. I am first and foremost a wife and a mom. I've been married 11-ish years, something like that. Mm-hmm. Three cute kids, and they are 6, 4, and 3.
Are they all girls, or do you have?
I have one boy.
One boy. Okay. Yeah.
Me too. So we're still in the thick of it. 6, 4, and 3. We had 2 really close together, which is a lot.
That's what I'm doing. I'm a little nervous, but it'll be fine.
There is definitely some moments that you'll feel like you're in over your head. Mm-hmm. But God's grace is good.
So. Yeah, for sure. Our first two are like 6 years apart. Okay. And then this one and my middle son, or my middle child, who's my boy, he and this little girl will be 19 months apart. So he's just really busy, though. Like, mm-hmm. I'm wondering if being pregnant with a toddler is harder or having a newborn with a toddler.
I'm not sure.
There's probably like cons to both and pros.
I think pregnant with other kids is always just.
He's really just so fast. He's like, he knows he's faster than I am right now. This morning he like went and we have like a little trampoline outside and he went and got in the corner of it and I could not get him. And I was like, oh my gosh.
You're going to stay there. See ya.
Bye. It's rough, but it's okay. God's grace, like you said, sustains.
Indeed. Yeah.
So not only are you a wife and a mom, but you're also a missionary.
Yeah. My husband and I work with Wycliffe Bible Translators. We are not translators. My husband's a mechanic and I'm a nurse. And we live in Papua New Guinea.
I think that is so cool that. Yeah. So you guys, you work for a translating like mission, but you guys don't translate.
No. So in Papua New Guinea, there's over 800 languages in the country as a whole, which is the most diverse country in the world.
Yeah.
Most languages in the world. So there's a huge need for translators, but there's not a whole lot of infrastructure in the country as a whole. So where we live up in the highlands, there's not many major cities, maybe 2. Mm-hmm. And even then, they're not what you would think of as a major city. Right. So we kind of provide the infrastructure for the translators so that they don't have to like leave the country for basic needs. So we have a clinic there. My husband runs the auto shop. And there's schools. What else do we have? A grocery store. So just kind of like a small little town of all the necessities so that we can make the lives of the translators easier so they can get their job done. Because it's a big job. I don't even. It takes like at least... It was average 20 years to just translate the New Testament.
My goodness.
And then you add in like, I don't know who's going to fix my car today. And that delays
And like them. Real life.
Yeah, exactly. And or just like things like my kid broke their arm and now I have to leave the country for who knows how long. Mm-hmm. Where now like we have the clinic there and we can do x-rays and set arms and.
Yeah, like it makes me think of in the Bible where they talk about the body being all different parts.
Yeah, 100%.
And so I think there's a lot of people that are like, oh, I can't live on mission or do ministry or anything because I'm not like a Bible teacher or whatever. But really, we're called to just use the gifts that God has given us where we're at. Yeah. So I love that.
Yeah, because like my husband and I both felt called to missions from a very young age, but we were like, we're not evangelists. We're not preachers. Like, we're not public speakers. So we did do some ministry before we were married, just kind of like generalized mission trips. And then we were like, you know what? We want a skill, something to be to offer people rather than just a warm body. Like, we wanted to have a skill to offer. And so then we ended up, you know, obviously lots of twists and turns.
So tell me about how you guys got to Papua New Guinea, like not like physically, but like what were the steps that happened? Tell me the beginning.
That's a long story. I think that we felt like the Lord was pushing us like, okay, it's time. Like we knew that we wanted to pursue careers and then get back into ministry. And, you know, the longer you're doing something, it's harder to leave. Mm-hmm. We built our life here in Gillette. We left. Sorry. We left Gillette in 2021. I'm not actually sure.
Sometime
in there. We were here about 8 years. Our kids were born here. We both had jobs here. Like we really built our life here. And then we're like, okay, now it's time to go. And my husband was like, I want to do something that I'm really using specifically diesel mechanics in ministry. And that's kind of specific. Like,
yeah.
So I'm like, okay. And so we're just kind of looking through things and people are like, oh yeah, I mean, we could use a handyman here. And he's like, I don't want to be a handyman. I want to be a mechanic. Like,
yeah.
So we stumbled upon good old Google. Just somehow Wycliffe had a posting for a diesel mechanic. We didn't actually know where in the world it was until we got into it more. So we kind of, because we'd been with Youth with a Mission in the past, and we kind of got fast tracked in that sense because they're like, oh, you've done this before, you know what you're getting into. Mm-hmm. And then in the process, my husband got laid off, which was kind of a blessing in disguise, just kind of pushed us along. Which of course, then we got pregnant with another child and we're like, okay, cool. Mm-hmm. Which is really a blessing also because we didn't know how we were going to work that into like, you can't really you have to come back to the States to have a baby. And that's a really hard transitional time. So we were really thankful to not do that as well. So God just timed everything out really well in that sense, like better than we could ever imagine. There was lots of times where we're like, how are we going to do this? Or how are we going to do that? Or it just felt like impossible. We had our home that we bought kind of at the worst time possible in Gillette. You know how that is. And then we ended up selling it. We only made like $1,000, but we definitely planned on eating money on that.
Yeah, so that's like, good. Sweet. That's a blessing.
Yeah, yeah. We were 100% planning on losing money. So we were like super jazzed to make
$1,000. For sure.
But that happened like because my daughter got the mail one day and we were just like throwing trash. Like, well, here's the junk mail. You can play with that. And she brought me this thing. And it was like a handwritten letter from a realtor that went out to like the whole neighborhood, but it was like, hey, we have someone interested in these townhouses. Are you even thinking about selling?
What?
And then, yeah. So it was like super weird. And I was throwing that away. And of course we contacted our realtor friend and he looked at everything up and was like, yeah, there's someone interested in your house and you want to sell it. And we're like, sure.
Wow.
So that like, we didn't have to like list it or do any of that stuff. Mm-hmm. And that just happened really smoothly. And it was just like one thing after another like that. That was just like, okay.
That is so cool.
Yeah.
So was it your husband who, I know you said you both wanted to do missions from a young age, but who was it kind of mutual then? Like you both were like, yes, let's do it.
Yeah, I think so.
And did you feel like you were like, let's do it and we're going to make it happen? Or were you guys like, yeah, let's do it and see what happens. And then God was like, here, here, here.
Oh, I think there was different seasons of that because there's times where it's like, you can't just be, I think most of the time you can't be passive.
Yeah.
And God can really push you to do stuff, but it's, I mean,
you have to see.
Yeah.
To be obedient.
And
yeah.
So we really had to push for it because there's a lot of, the process is like insane with visas and stuff, mm-hmm. and getting my nursing license approved over there was an absolute nightmare and the amount of documents they needed. So there was definitely like that like effort that had to be put forth and passports and visas. And I think my children have posed for a half a dozen passport photos in their young little lives for visas and everything. We're in that process again right now, actually. And then the hurdles of like raising finances, that was huge. Like we couldn't do it on our own. Like obviously the Lord really helped us with that, but it was also something that he was like, you have to try, like you have to put forth the effort. Like I can only, you know, like I'll meet you halfway. Like he can do whatever. God's bank is, you know, endless, but it was like, I'm not going to just like hand you everything. Like I want you to show the effort and put it forth. So, I mean, he blessed us immensely because we raised all of our own finances to be over there.
It was part of the refining process when he it's just like kids, you know, like you're like, I want to give you this, but I'm not going to. I want you to work for it because I want your character to be built and all of that. So he does that to us too.
Yeah, for sure.
Which is so, it's a blessing. So you guys raised all your finances. And then
that took us about a year, I think.
A year. Okay. So the whole process before you actually left, how long was that?
I think it was about 2 years.
Okay.
If we hadn't have had a baby in there, it might have been a little faster.
Yeah.
And then we also were studying this right at COVID. So we initially reached out to Wycliffe in January of 2020 and then COVID happened, obviously.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
So that made things slower. A bit slower also. So and then we were delayed about 4 months with our visas.
Okay.
We're supposed to go in January of 22.
Is it common for 22. Visas to like do that? Because I have friends that are moving and it's like all up in the air because of visas.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think when you're talking long-term visas and then there's like, it's government stuff.
Yeah, it just.
And then like the government in other countries that you're trying to talk to, right. and they're like, "What? We're not in any hurry."
I've just never personally tried to get a working visa, so I didn't know that the process was so
complicated. Yeah. I mean, I think most countries have been burned now enough mm-hmm. by other people and other countries mm-hmm. that they're hesitant to let people. They don't want us coming in and taking jobs from their people.
Yeah,
so we're actually under a stipulation that we're also training as we're working. Oh. So we also train Papua New Guineans in the roles that we are in mostly.
I didn't know that. That's yeah. awesome. So what was it like once you got there? Like, was it the transitional period? What was that like?
Oh, it's because on top of it, you have like jet lag.
Right.
It yeah. took us
physically. You're like exhausted. 80
some hours to get there because of delays. Gosh. Like we got stuck in Singapore for 30 hours or something like that. So from like door to door, it was 80 some hours. We were so exhausted.
And I just want to clarify, they took their kids with.
Yes. Like, we don't leave them behind.
So yeah, you're stuck. I had like on these things a baby. With three kids. Yeah.
I had. So when we went, he turned one the day after we got to PNG. So then as a 1-year-old, a 2-year-old. And a 4-year-old.
Oh my goodness.
For 80 hours in airports. And my youngest wasn't even walking yet.
I
carried
hard.
A baby for 80 hours. Was this miserable?
Yeah.
Anyway, let me think. So, yeah, I think what I had said when you asked me that before was like, as parents, you have to like kind of muster any fake confidence mm-hmm. you can just to be like, I don't want them to be nervous or scared or worried. And so I'm like, yeah, we got this, you know, like just walk in with confidence, even though I have not a clue what we're doing.
Yeah.
Fortunately, kids are so unaware of the cultural differences and that like it's such a sweet thing to watch them like not see language or culture as a barrier to right. relationships. And so that's really fun for us. To watch that and kind of be led by them in that, to be like, because I think that we're naturally like hesitant towards cultural barriers
change.
Like, yeah. And they're just like, I mean, I hate to be like, oh, kids are so resilient, but they really are.
Yeah.
As long as you're like also caring for them in that. So there's been a lot of big emotions. There's a lot of hard things. And my oldest, I think she's about the same age as your oldest.
Mm-hmm.
She is a huge feeler, and at that age, like to feel whatever emotions, she wasn't sure how to like label them, and she still really struggles with that. And so a lot of times it would just come out as I was missing the dog that we had right. to leave behind. So that was really difficult to like navigate our own emotions, like as my husband and I are like feeling overwhelmed and like, what have we gotten ourselves into? Mm-hmm. Like, and we're halfway across the world. Like literally as far from here as you can get, I think, and wondering like if we made the right decision and feeling like everything is brand yeah. new. We don't know, like all the smells are different. Everything looks different. The food is different. Like there's nothing that feels like home. And then we're having to like be confident and encourage our kids to walk out in faith too. So it was yeah. like trying to like keep our own emotions in check and then also like help our kids walk through whatever they think they're feeling. Too.
Right.
It's really hard.
I was just talking to someone about how making decisions for our kids feels so much harder because you have so much responsibility and yeah. pressure and fear of making the wrong choice. And I think sometimes, like for me, I will like focus so much on like an example, homeschool versus like public school or private school, whatever. That just feels like the end of the world. You're like, I want to make the right decision. Mm-hmm. I want to do what's right. Mm-hmm. But really, God has got it. Yeah. Like in 10 years, we look back and we're like, okay, that wasn't as big of a deal as it felt.
Mm-hmm.
But you're literally changing your whole life. So yeah. you're like wondering yeah. like, am I messing my kid up? Like, did you have thoughts like that?
Oh, 100%.
Because I do about silly things too.
All the time. Like daily. I'm like, are we screwing our kids up? Like,
yeah.
Because like right now we're living in the States for 6-ish months and basically just settled into that awkwardness of transition and unsettled. And you know how that is with kids, even little transitions from like a crib to a big kid bed yeah. is like chaotic.
Yeah.
And so we're like trying to think of how to parent with grace and kindness towards our children. But also I'm like, I'm not going to let you get away with that. Mm. But I also know that you're probably just acting out because you don't know how to act in this situation. And so I'm constantly, and I've like done all the research on like missionary kids and third culture kids. And there's all this negative stuff about
really?
How they like, oh, because it's so transitional that like, it's really hard for them to like really dig roots. And I've seen this in my 6-year-old already. She's going to first grade mm-hmm. at a Christian school in Spearfish. It's been great. But I've seen how she's not connecting and she's not like, it's very like a superficial, like I go, I come back and it's done kind of thing.
Yeah.
Because she knows that she's only there for a short bit of time. So she's not willing to like invest in relationships like she has in the past. And it's like super sad to see that as a 6 year old. I'm like,
yeah,
she's dealing with some really big things that most 6 year olds don't have to deal with. And so I feel like horrible. And like, you know, most people are like, this is the coolest thing that you're offering.
Well,
your
that's
kids,
what I'm thinking,
you know,
this whole time. Yeah.
And it's like, I genuinely am praying every day that like, that my kids know the voice of God over the enemy, because I think that there's so many easy things that he can use to just be like, you know, like there's a sense of unsettledness. There's a sense of like, I'm missing out on American things. Mm-hmm. You know, I think we have a really awesome setup where we live. Like we have a really great school. They offer so many things with like what they can anyway. Mm-hmm. But like, she's really disappointed because we don't have dance class there, you know, like simple things like that, that I can't do for her.
Yeah.
And so,
and things you just wouldn't think of when you're like in the planning process.
Right. Yeah. And you don't know what like their interests are going to be. And you can't just be like, oh, today she's interested in a Rubik's Cube. I'm going to go get one at the store. And I'm like, I don't have that option. Like there's not resources there to like just get whatever she wants. So we have to be more creative. And I think like there's really, I've seen like the far ends of the spectrum. Like I've seen really amazing kids come out of the life of a missionary kid and like really thrive, and then others that are just like bitter about the whole experience because of just like the weightiness of the life that we live. And I think it's kind of similar to like a pastor's kid situation where like you kind of see where there's some pastor's kids that are like awesome and they become pastors themselves, and then others that are like, whoa, like because there's such a, like, we live in such a fishbowl of like people's eyes are on us. We come back to the States, we visited probably a dozen churches already, and people are looking at us like, oh, these are the missionary kids, like they're supposed to be perfect, and like kids are like
that,
you know,
pressure. Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure my kids are feral and free range, so I'm like, I'm so sorry.
We are not your expectations. Yeah.
Like, we live in the jungle, so I don't know how to get shoes on them.
No, that totally makes sense though. So my dad was in the Army our whole lives, like he just retired a few years ago, and my brother moves like a lot, and then I have not left since I graduated here. Like I did online school and everything. Yeah. And so I feel like, yeah, that's like the two different ways. Yep. He's like, well, I loved that lifestyle. Let's keep like, going. And I was like, I
think there's
stay.
Like that hesitancy to dig deep, or if people get to a certain point, and that's when you've usually moved as a kid, like you build a relationship to a certain point and it gets uncomfortable. And now what I've grown up doing is moving when it feels like when I'm getting to this depth of relationship with someone. So that's what they do. They move because that's just what has been their coping their whole life. Or you have the opposite who's like, I'm never moving again.
Yeah, me, yeah.
Like we have another, a good friend who's like, I really like, we're so amped. We want to go to PNG because they lived in another country for a long time. But she's like, we have to wait for our oldest daughter to graduate because she said that her dream is to never move again. Aww. So like you do have to make some decisions for your kid's sake, at least when they get a little bit older. And I mean, different things. But
yeah,
I think you see different ends of the spectrum. And I'm just like constantly like begging God, like, please help me have grace for my kids and teach them your grace and help them to like love this like we do. And we really want to like help them to find their place in ministry too.
Yeah.
Like, it's not just something that we do and they're just tagging along.
Right.
So.
Which is so good. And that's what I keep thinking as you talk, like they're so blessed because God's given you this awareness of it all. I had no idea that, I mean, it makes sense, but that like mission kids can come out of it and be like, that was not fun. But because to me, I'm thinking, and I'm sure you get this a lot, it's like such an adventure.
Yeah.
They get to have so much fun. Our mutual friend Paige was like saying, she used to FaceTime you guys, and she was like talking about how much she just loves the lifestyle you guys have, because they do just get to like not wear shoes and go outside and have fun.
Yeah.
So there's so many pros, but also I totally get the mama's heart part of it. And we are so blessed to have God who will, you know, intervene where we can't, because we cannot be perfect no matter how hard we try to make their childhood perfect. But no, that's really interesting about yours. So how old is she now?
My kiddo's six.
Six. Okay. Yeah. My daughter's seven. And I even see a lot of emotions with her. So I feel like it's probably just.
Yeah. And like, I feel like typically you're supposed to have a pretty stable childhood to like process all these big feelings. Yeah. And we're like over here, you know.
I think that's what we're told. But like,
I don't know. Maybe.
Who
says
that though? Like, who decides?
So it's just, I think we have like, we just have to be way more conscious of it. And I think it's been touched on, maybe Karen said, but like, when you're doing things like that in the will of God, like, of course, mm-hmm. Satan is going to come and attack you. And of course, he's going to try to steal whatever productivity that you have because he doesn't want that moving forward. So I think like there is an attack on our kids because that is kind of the thing that will pull us out.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah.
I'm not going to be there if my kids are in mm-hmm. jeopardy in any sense, whether it be like mental health wise mm-hmm. or physically, whatever. And so I think that we do have to really protect that because I think that in the theme of all that you've talked about in this podcast, like emotions are something that God gave us, but Satan is so good at hijacking that.
For sure.
And so I'm like constantly in this fight against like, you know, we want to hear his voice louder and we want to give those emotions to him because it's like Satan can take something from your childhood and ruin your whole life with it. Like, you know, like a lot of the issues that we struggle with as adults, you know, you go to counseling and they're like, okay, let's pin this back to your childhood because that's probably where it started. And it's like, so then I'm like, okay, how can I protect their childhood and things that Satan's going to take and twist and make them believe, you know, he can put a weird filter on a lot of your childhood memories just to ruin your future. And so it's like praying that over our children so that, you know, we can help them.
But like, who's to say, like, would you have been praying that hard and turning mm-hmm. to God that much if you weren't in this position? Yeah. I remember Quinn was one night, this is a long story, but basically she felt like she was being attacked. She knows really like basic things, you know, about the Bible. She's like, I just feel like bad in here. Like, mm-hmm. I just feel bad. And so I was like, okay, can I pray over you? And so I did. And I was like, do you want me to stay in here a little bit? And she's like, no. God's watching. It's okay. And then mm-hmm. she just went to sleep. And I was like, how cool.
Yeah.
But I was like, it sounds naive, but I didn't think of like Satan attacking our children. Mm-hmm. And then I know Karen too has dealt with that since mm-hmm. they've moved to plant the church with Daniel. And mm-hmm. it's just hard to watch that. But at the same time, I was like, that is so cool that you just turn to God and you're like, and then you trust him mm-hmm. and then you just go to sleep. Like,
yeah.
What? I would kids be like, okay, so but great. Do you got me?
Yeah.
Like,
let me think through every scenario first.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I just think that like through this whole process, they're going to learn this faith that is mm-hmm. just
And that's
crazy.
My hope and prayer, like that we can model that for them.
Yeah.
And they can see that and that we can involve them in that way that they do see that. So,
and the amount that you're praying and like asking God for help in that position, because here in America, we have so much like just right there, you know, like mm-hmm. I can go to the store and get a Rubik's Cube. And really, those things are silly, but I get like,
that to a kid, it feels like the end of the world, you know, like when she's getting all these silly little toy flyers in the mail right now mm-hmm. at my parents' house.
Yeah, I
know. And I'm like, oh.
We just got the Amazon catalog.
It is making me crazy. And she's just flipping through it and wants every little thing. And I'm like, honey, we can't. Like, and
as a kid, but it's
I'm
so
like,
good too.
And trying to like help them walk through that disappointment in a way that's mm-hmm. healthy and not like, I'm mad at my parents for the life they've chosen because I don't get the toys that I want. Because that's really where they're at. Like, it's silly for us. You know, like, I can live without that.
For sure. Yeah.
But for them, like, that's kind of their life right
but
now,
don't you so. Think though, like walking through that disappointment with them and like showing them a healthy way is so much better than like
waiting until they're 30 and having a tantrum because they don't have the nicest newest car.
Yes, exactly. Like they are learning lessons right now. Like I don't need everything my peers have.
Yeah.
And I think you guys are a great example of that because you went without a lot. Like mm-hmm. it's not like they're the only ones that aren't getting everything.
Yeah.
You guys also probably did not like have everything you wanted over mm-hmm. there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So tell me about like the culture then, like the differences, I guess, like is, I don't know how to word this are the emotions, since that's what we're talking about over there. Have you noticed a difference between like Western culture and mm-hmm. their
mm-hmm. The weirdest emotions? Thing is, so we live in a community with a bunch of other missionaries.
And
so we
have all like American?
It's probably 65%.
Okay.
75% American. And then you've got Europeans. And so like, but there's this weird subculture then within our community of like all these expatriates. That's just means that we're not from that country.
Okay.
That living together in this really tight knit community. So there's that whole weird subculture that I won't get into. And then I hesitate to say too much about the Papua New Guinean culture because I think it's super diverse and like, like there's 800 languages. That means there's 800 specific cultures.
Why is there 800?
Because the country as a whole is super mountainous.
Okay.
And so like there's people that are just like, it's isolated
cut off from each other.
So it's like for years, people like didn't know that there was really a village maybe 2 miles away, but they're like up and over a ridge. Mm-hmm. So there's villages on mountaintops. Like it is absolutely insane. Like most of the a huge part of what we like our ministry does is flying helicopters and small aircrafts to get to these villages that are really remote and isolated. Anyway, so yeah, there's 800 over 800 distinct languages. Yeah. And then
that so means like narrowing it down to one culture.
Cultures yeah, within right. that. So I hesitate to like blanket the whole culture. There is definitely more of that tribal aspect mm-hmm. because they are still very tribal people. They have that camaraderie, that like loyalty to their people. And I think if they were to meet another Papua New Guinean outside of their country, like they would be, you know, like we are loyal to each other.
But
within the country, it's very like, if you're not from my village, then I'm not loyal to you.
Okay.
And so there's really a sweetness in that. And there's some like difficulties within that too. I think there's a difficulty with like unifying the whole nation to like, you know, one common goal. But then there's also like, there's people from every village in the main cities. And so then if someone needs something in the main city, they can find someone from their village and they will take care of each other. So there's really a sweetness about that. I think emotions is something that's very private for them.
Okay.
As an outsider, they won't let me into that. Like, I don't know that I've really seen a Papua New Guinean cry other than for like a true mourning season.
Yeah, because you're a nurse, so you probably see like hard things.
And they are so stone cold in that scenario. Okay. And I think part of that is because, I don't know, it's so big.
Right,
like
right.
American culture, we're so like, go, go, go. Like we don't have time for emotions. And so we bottle it up and then it explodes. And so I've witnessed that in lots of places. Yeah. And I've seen that in myself where I'm like, I just had a meltdown in the grocery store over something silly because I bottled it up for so long, where that doesn't happen there because they're a slower culture. Mm-hmm. They work with their hands. They don't have devices. I mean, everyone has a cell phone, but they don't really have internet. They're not scrolling Facebook like we are.
They're like using it actually as a tool.
Yeah. Like to call people and like maybe listen to music. So it's like they really have a lot more time to be thinking and processing. Like I've seen them, like they work in the fields, they work in their gardens, like they are working with their hands. And I think there's something to be said about like the stillness and the quiet of working with your hands.
Yeah,
and
being able to definitely. Just
and so I think my initial reaction was like, oh, they don't really have emotions. They must really stuff it. But I think it's because they're kind of processing as they go and they don't have those big things. And I think they're used to a little more trauma than
we are.
That's
what I was going to say. They're probably more resilient because they have to go through hard things.
And they know that like if they don't tend their garden today, that might mean they don't have a meal in the next week kind of thing. So it's just totally different. It's definitely a slower culture. And I think that they're definitely more private about their emotions.
Is there anything you've taken away that you're like, I want to do that?
In a weird sense, which I think I talked about this when I answered this question, but the way they do grief is, I don't necessarily want to do the way they do grief, but I like how they carve out space. So like when there is someone that dies in their family, like they have a house cry is what they call it. And people come to their home and everyone cries loudly. It's very uncomfortable as an outsider.
Yeah.
But it's very like an intentional carved out time where the family is expected to just be grieving. And I think that was a normal thing in really every culture prior to Westernization. Uh-huh. I don't know, like the Bible talks about like the season of mourning. And I think, was it like old English people and those old shows I've watched, you know, they like have to wear black for a certain season of time. And so I think that like I had a good friend that walked through this with his good Papua New Guinean friend where her husband died. And so he really, it was his good friend that died. And then his family was close then with the mom and the kids and really walked with them through this whole process. And he was like, it was really cool to see how they carved out this time to just grieve. And no one expected anything from them but to just be sad and cry. Yeah. And then they get back into normal life, you know, and like they don't act like nothing happened, but like they took the time and the space for that. And I don't think that we do that well in American culture where it's like, okay, you have your hour and a half at the funeral to be sad and grieve, but then we're going to move on and the rest of us are going to move on with life. And maybe I'll remember to bring you a casserole, but maybe not.
Right. Like, you hear that commonly, like people are like, whoa, everyone else just
moves on.
Yeah. Expects me to just jump back in because the funeral's over. And like, that's like 1 week. Usually-ish. That's interesting.
I there's definitely some good takeaways in like the way that they carve out the space for that grieving time. They are very like community oriented. Mm-hmm. Everyone gives towards the family. So there's, yeah, there's definitely some really cool things. There's definitely, there's pros and cons, you know,
every culture for sure.
is like, okay, well you do that well, but you don't do that well. And I don't want to talk negatively about Papua New Guineans.
Right, of course.
They're incredible people. They're very kind to us and they're very hospitable, but they also are very like, you're not one of us. So yeah. I'm not letting you into that.
Do you think that's like a protective stance or just like normal? Yeah. Like, I mean, honestly, if somebody even, oh my goodness, in Wyoming, if someone comes from not Wyoming,
that's true.
They act different. Yeah,
that's true.
And I was also thinking when you were talking about all the different villages and such about like the church, like how we have so many denominations and we're very much like we'll protect our own. Mm-hmm. And it's a little bit divided, which is sad. Yeah. But then in the grand scheme of things, like we're all Christian and they're kind of like that. Like we're all from here. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we also have our own little tribes.
Yeah.
So, okay. So you guys were there for how long?
Just over 2 years.
Okay. And then you came back.
Yeah. We came back to the States in June.
Okay. And how's that going?
I think.
And you're planning on going back.
Yeah. So we go back to Papua New Guinea in January. Okay. Our home is there. So our kids.
Yeah. So just really quick, she corrected me because we were talking earlier and I said it was a mission trip. I don't know. I just had not thought about it, but you're like, no, that's where we live. Yeah. Like, that's our home.
It's like a 2-year trip.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a long time.
Yeah. And we don't have a home here. So we're like living with my parents and we've stayed with my husband's parents for a bit.
So this is like a visiting trip.
Yeah.
And you just left.
This is our trip. Yeah.
Yeah.
Lived. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So. Sorry, the transition back.
Okay.
I think it was easier for my husband and I than we expected. I think I expected to feel a lot more emotions, but maybe I will feel them later. I'm not really sure. I'm still kind of feeling that out because my kids have had such a hard time
transitioning.
Yeah, because they don't remember the States and they don't remember a lot from here. And there's a lot of expectations that are put on them. The people don't even realize they're putting on them. And I understand it. Like, it makes sense. I don't know that most people wouldn't think that my kids are having a hard time. They're really happy, fun. Mm-hmm.
But you kids, see it.
But we see, like, there's been more tantrums from my littlest guy. You know, he's only 3. And people just expect for them to kind of know them and that kind of thing.
That's hard.
Yeah. And they're like, yeah, sure, I don't remember you.
Yeah, and, right.
Like, my middle daughter, she's so confident. And someone was like, oh, how's it been being in America? And she's like, I don't live here.
Yeah. You know,
like,
That's just her reaction.
She's like, I don't live here.
And which is true, though.
Yeah. And so, like, they've definitely felt. And, like, we just recently had an experience at a really small church. And I think there was just my kids and one other kid in the childcare at church. And the lady afterward was like, I think your kids are ready to go home, as in like Papua New Guinea home. And so other people are starting to see that. And I feel bad because like we really want to like spend quality time with our family and our friends here. But also I'm like, this is getting to be really difficult for my kids' like well-being. But it's hard because my family wants to be with my kids and I get that. And I want them to be with my kids because they're my pride and joy and I want to share them. But I'm also like, how do I protect them and help them navigate all of it? So,
yeah. And you said there's like resources then for you like to read, or is there not
there
a lot
is,
out there?
No, there's quite a few books about missionary kids or just third culture kids. There's definitely more research coming out about third culture kids because that includes then like your military families that are living overseas or your embassy people. Like there's definitely more than just missionary kids overseas. There's a lot of negative stuff out there about it. And so I actually was in a group with a lady who's trying to kind of change that culture. She's like, I want to do the research and I want to see the positives because it's really easy to focus on the negative things and to like focus on, there's a transientness of them, but there's also like an adaptability where they can like befriend anyone. And I think I've seen that with my kids too. Like they don't see that. Like we grow up and as we get older, we see that's a barrier to relationship with that person. Or she's 10 years older than me. I probably won't be really good friends with her. Yeah. You know, like, and we have to like really be conscious to overcome those barriers. Or my kids are like,
mm-hmm. could care less.
You know, yeah. you're another human and I want to be your friend.
Right.
You know, and sometimes I'm like, okay, we need to learn a little bit of respect for elders here. Yeah. But for the most part, like they just see another human being and they want to be friends. So we want to focus on that kind of stuff that most, because a lot of the resources are really negative and it, a lot of them are
that
coming
surprises
from,
me.
Well, because the people that speak out are the missionary kids or the third culture kids that have had a hard time.
Okay. Yeah.
And I think that we're trying to change that culture in general, like people that are struggling are the ones usually the loudest.
Yeah, right.
And so it's good, I think, for me to be aware of those things. It was really hard for me not to be like, this is the worst. We're not doing this. I'm not doing this to my kids, you know, mm-hmm. and have that fear of like, I'm ruining my children. But then I realized like, I'm going to have that fear no matter where we are.
Yeah,
I have
sure.
that fear all the time mm-hmm. of, am I ruining my kids? And I think I just, as a mom, I think it's really important to like stand against that and be like, yeah. no, I'm not going to be afraid of any like
yeah no literally
we're out of here
yeah lived in the same house since my daughter's like 6 months old and she has big emotions and there's a lot of times that I'm like oh my gosh I'm ruining her this is what she's mm-hmm. going to talk about in counseling someday
yep.
but also we live in the era of like or the age of like counseling I think I might have mentioned this or I was just talking to someone about it I don't remember but like counseling can kind of be overdone sometimes. So as much as I've talked about how good counseling can mm-hmm. be, we also are in a weird time where people think everything needs counseling. I think I might've talked about it with Karen. I don't
know. Yeah. And it's like, sometimes you just need a good friend.
Yeah. And sometimes you just need a friend or like, yeah. So we're like yeah. overly aware of like our kids mm-hmm. and their emotions and the potential need for counseling someday yeah. because we're all like doing that.
And And like you said with Karen was like, sometimes you just need a good friend. And why are we so willing to like call up a stranger yeah.
and pay them
yeah. to be open and honest? Why can't we just choose to be open and honest with a friend?
Right. So I actually had a question kind of about that. So within that culture of different missionaries from, because you're all from different, like, even if it's the US, mm-hmm. from different places.
Yeah.
So what is it like within that? Is it a welcoming community? Like, do you feel like you can share, like, this is really hard. My kids are struggling with this, or how is that?
Yeah, it's such a sweet place we live because you have that the camaraderie of like, we're all in this together. We yeah. all have been called out of our life that we were living to this crazy life mm-hmm. that's like, we're like in a mountaintop, literally in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
And so we kind of can like, there's definitely that fine line of like, okay, we can't just commiserate together all the time because then it's like super negative.
Right.
But to be able to have that, like, yep, I'm struggling with this today. Like, can you just pray for me? Or like, oh yeah, I totally understand. Like been there, done that.
Yeah.
Like keep pushing through. Yeah. Like, it's all right. We're going to make it through kind of thing. And just like, we do care for one another because like we have to, like I think that we have like where we live, we have that community that everyone really wants in America right now, that like
so
homestead
cool.
community that everyone's talking about right now, because it's like on the weekends, our store's closed. Our store closes at 4:00. So if I don't remember to get everything I need for dinner that night by 4:00, I'm kind of at the mercy of my neighbors. And
yeah.
so I call up my neighbor or I just holler across the, you know, the deck to her. And I'm like, do you got a cup of sugar or a couple
yeah.
extra carrots or whatever? Like, because that is like, it's necessary. I don't have access to a grocery store
yeah.
after 4:00, which is just like mind blowing to people here.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so like we're forced to really depend on each other and it's been really sweet. Like we've been super blessed by really great neighbors, like all the way around us that would drop anything if we needed them to. And like, things happen. We had one of the gals, she was pregnant and she was planning to leave the country, but she ended up, her water broke really, really early. Mm-hmm. She had several kids left back in Papua New Guinea and people really cared well for them while she,
so she, you know, had, to
she
leave.
Had to leave to go to Australia okay. to get medical care. I think her husband did stay with the kids for a bit until he could get the house wrapped up and get all of the kids, but they had 5 kids, I think. So trying to get everyone moved, like it's just a lot, like logistics wise, it's a lot. And so we really have to depend on our community. And that's something that's really beautiful about
definitely.
Like where we live. And I think that the Papua New Guineans are very kind to us. They don't understand quite the big picture of what our life really is outside of there, just because they haven't been exposed to that. But they're so like, they want to serve us. Like they want to do their part in Bible translation and they know that that means serving us.
Okay.
Not all of them, but there are definitely like, that is a lot of their heart. And it's like, so it's customary for us as Westerners there, like they want to serve us in like, we have a lady who comes and helps me clean the house, feels so privileged here, but there, like, that's expected and I pay her, but she, it's also like her contribution to Bible translation, because that frees me up to be able to do more. And everything is a lot of effort there. I mean, like, I hang dry my clothes and everything is made from scratch. And
yeah, it's like what the Instagram right now is like all about. But you're like, but are you actually ready, like, for that?
Do you really know what it means to realize that you can't start a lot of laundry not have at 9 o'clock at night? Yeah. Yeah, I'm like, I can't. I need this washed for tomorrow, but I don't think that I can. Like,
and a lot of like older people and older generations talk about like asking their neighbor for sugar and stuff like that. And we've gone away from that in our generation, but that is really cool to
be
able. We
all have like house phones, like that old too. So I feel like we kind of step back in time where we live, which is really fun. And like our kids really won't get away with anything because there's eyes all over the place.
Yeah.
So and my like daughter did run away from home once and everyone knew where she was. So I was like sorry. Fine. I was at work and there was someone watching her. And so the lady was like, she saw her run off, but she had the other two kids. So I was like, oh my word. She came to my work. I was just like, I really wasn't that worried because I knew that there was 1,000 eyes watching her. And if she was getting in trouble,
interest at heart. Yeah, that is special. Yeah. And I'm sure that really did help with like the adapting to new like life over there.
Yeah.
And so throughout it all, you've felt like God has called you to stay over there for like a long time.
Yeah. At this point. Yeah.
Like, you have no end date.
Mm-mm, no.
How often do you have to come back for visas?
We can renew visas in the country, so we don't have to leave for that. Okay. It timed out that way, which was kind of unfortunate. It's easier to renew in the country. But mental health-wise, we're kind of... Well, I think we're given 3 months stateside for every 6 months. No, for every year we're there. Yeah. So for every year, you're kind of expected to spend 3 months in your home country. Okay. Just for the like maintaining, because I mean, we have all of our support comes from here.
Family too.
So maintaining relationships. We don't want people to feel like they're just throwing money into something they don't know about. Like, we want to connect with our people that are kind of keeping us over there, which is, that's important to us. And then our family and stuff. So we're kind of on the two and a half years in country and then 6 months back here.
Okay.
We're kind of going to see how that goes. Just like this, it's hard to find the right amount of time to be here, because we're like really crazy busy trying to see everyone and do all the things and see all the doctor's appointments and all the things we can't do there. And then of course there's, you know, all the food that we need to eat.
All of the amenities.
So we're kind of trying to figure out what the right balance is of time here, and what that will look like, and it will depend on school and stuff
like that. And there's no way you can know until you like try it out and you're like, that didn't work.
Right. So we're like, okay, this travel schedule was probably a little too intense. We won't probably do it like that way again. We've done a lot of traveling and we actually leave Thursday for another trip. So
you do to back there?
No, we're going down to Florida on Thursday.
Oh, but still, your kids are going to be pro travelers.
They're so tired of the car. Thankfully we're flying, because they're like so over riding in the car. We've done, I think we started the timer in the car. It was like 30 some hours. So
my goodness. See, but 40. Like, that's what's so cool is like your kids are going to be so patient and adaptable.
That or just like rage mode about rage everything. Mode. I don't know.
I don't think so. I think that I really feel like they're not going to be.
So
they're just, they just get a really cool opportunity through you guys and through God's calling. And then obviously, you know this, but like he will sustain you through it all. And you keep turning back to him and doing such a good job of like, I can't do this, but you can. So please help. Yeah. I do have a question. When you guys were asking for money, that sounds weird. Mm-hmm. When you guys were asking for money, what was that like? Like, was that hard?
So uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Because especially in our culture, like, you're expected to work hard for your money. And then some days I'm like, y'all, I work really hard.
Yeah, I work really hard all the time.
Because we do kind of work like normal 9 to 5 jobs there. And then we're, our finances then comes from people like sacrificing here to send money there for us.
Yeah.
So it's really awkward. It's really uncomfortable. It's hard to like, some people have never been exposed to that concept before. So trying to explain that well. And then we feel this like really heavy pressure to like steward our money really well, because we know that what we have is because someone else sacrificed. And then like sometimes we get too heavy on that and then we're like, we got to do something fun. It doesn't matter. Like, and we have people that are so kind. Just my husband actually called me when I was on my way over here and he's like, someone wants to give so that we can do something fun while we're in Florida. We're going down there for a conference with our ministry. So they're like, we do have people that are like willing to give to the fun stuff and we're so thankful for that. But it does feel like it's so humbling to be like on the receiving end of people's sacrificial giving.
Yeah.
And so it was a huge hurdle. It was a lot of money that our ministry was like, this is how much it costs. Like, we don't want you being over there and struggling financially. So we want you to do this beforehand and we won't let you go until you're at this amount, which felt like kind of frustrating for us. Cause we're like, well, I'm sure we can live on this, you know, we'll be fine. Yeah. And so like, they're like, nope, we want you to 100% of your the budget that we created for you. And we've been so blessed by that. And like, we're never like scrambling. Like there's been a few things we're like, I'm not really sure we're gonna pay for that, and God always shows up. But for the most part, like, because they made us put in the work to ask and do all the uncomfortable asking prior to going, like, we haven't needed, like, we save, like, we have it in our budget to save for our trip back and forth, because it costs $10,000 just to get our family over there.
Yeah.
So like, just for plane tickets to go back in January was like close to $10,000, which is like But
like you said, it's like humbling yourself, because I was talking to Karen about that, because they also have had to humble themselves to plant a church. And I was like, is that really hard? And you're right. It's like our culture is like, you work
for what you have. I'd rather just go get a job.
Yeah. You work for what you have. You work hard and you don't ask about like anybody else's money, and you don't ask for money.
Right.
Like, that's seen so down upon.
Yeah. But then there's been times where the Lord's convicted me, like, how come you didn't offer that person the opportunity to join in the ministry?
Yeah.
Because I didn't call them to go. I called them to give, but you didn't ask them.
Yeah.
And so like, there's been times where I'm like, I don't want to ask another person. But then God's been like, that's a missed opportunity for them. Because when people are giving to us, like, they're being a part of the ministry. They're not physically there, but they're part of it with us. And so like, that's, I think, our biggest heart is that we want people to know that they can be a part of overseas ministry and Bible translation without like being there. Because I think people think, oh, that's too big for me. But I don't, you can give $5 a month and be a part of it, you know, or whatever amount it is. Like, so I think that was our biggest like conviction, or I don't know what the right word is.
No, but that's really good.
To just be like, it's not our place to be like, no, I'm not going to ask a person. It's too uncomfortable. But the Lord is like, I wanted them to have an opportunity to be a part of my bigger plan or my bigger thing. And sometimes people are like, we don't feel led to that right now. We're giving somewhere else. Like, and that's great. That's cool. Fine. Yeah. Like, and we're not like going to be mad about that.
Yeah.
Like, but we just can being still obedient. Have a relationship.
Yeah. It's so good. And so. Karen explained it to me. She's like, well, I mean, it was hard, but she says like, it's God's money, like ultimately. So yeah, you're inviting them to steward it the way that he wants. And that is really
And like,
cool.
There's, speaking of emotions again, money brings up a lot of emotions.
Yeah.
A lot of people have a lot of emotions tied to money. And That's so true, for us, we had to like kind of address that in our own life and to kind of cut those cords with emotions and money, because it's huge. And I've seen it played out in a lot of people's lives, how their connection to money really affected how their life would have played out. And so that was a little convicting too, of like, I don't know.
No, that totally makes sense. I've not really thought about that, how emotions are tied to money, but they really are. Well,
and there's that, like that, you know, the pendulum swing of like, it's just money, we'll get more and who cares, you know? And then you're like, oh, I'm not being a wise steward of my resources. Yeah. So
there's definitely like a middle ground. Yeah. God gives us bumper rails.
Yeah.
Well, is there anything else that you wanted to add or like that you feel is important? I've loved listening to it all. Like, it's just so good. I was really excited because I haven't, like talked to you personally about this. So
it's a whole thing. Like, I feel like it's just the tip of the iceberg. Like, it's just a crazy life we live. And I'm so appreciative that like people are willing to like ask questions, and we are not superstars. Like, people I feel like put us on a pedestal because we're the missionaries. Someone once told us, like, can you pray because God hears your prayers better than mine because you're a missionary? And I was like, that's not true.
That's not how that works.
So it's very humbling to be like put in this like cool like status category, because we're like, we're just normal people. And I think that the call of God on everyone's life is scary sometimes, and that fear will hold us back from things that God has for us. And I 100% don't think everyone is called to be an overseas missionary, because that wouldn't work. People are called to all sorts of things and be missional and in life, and however that looks for each individual person. But I do always feel like it's important to remind people that there is, that God has called each person to something specific.
Yeah. To a mission.
Yeah. Yeah. And that doesn't have to be this crazy thing like we're doing, but also like be willing for it to be something crazy and don't let fear hold you back. I think that huge change that God asks you to do is often tangled up with fear and grief. We grieved over leaving the life that we built here, but that doesn't make it not of the Lord. And I think you and Karen talked about that too.
Yeah, for sure. And like the comfort of just what you know.
Yeah.
Like you had to and surrender like, all of that.
And there was a song I just listened to and now I can't find it, but it was talking about like how silly it is, the things that I'm worried about sacrificing in comparison to what the Lord has sacrificed for us. And so it's like, you know what? There are times where I feel really frustrated or sad or lonely or like, what have we done? Like, I miss my family. I miss the comforts of America. I miss the life that we lived. I miss our house and our dog and our white picket fence. But then it's like, that sacrifice is so minimal. And like, in the long run, when I get to the end of my life, I want to say that I did what the Lord asked me to do and that I contributed to people being in heaven, not to the American dream.
Yeah, or to whatever. Your white picket fence.
Yeah, for sure. It's hard. And there's a lot of conviction in my own life of like, I don't know that I'm worthy of this. Like, you know, and so I'm just trying to like surrender my emotions to Him because I'm a natural stuffer, you know?
Yeah.
So just like being open-handed with my emotions. I think that's something that I always want to like bring out too is like, let's just feel the things, surrender them to the Lord. Like fear is a big one. And I talk about that a lot in life because I'm like, I refuse to live by fear. And I've submitted that to God so many times that I feel like if I do feel real fear, it's usually the Holy Spirit. Like,
oh, so you
for something
know.
Legit. And like, how many times so have we given power to emotions and then we can't hear the Holy Spirit when it's an appropriate emotion or reaction? So like, that's something that I'm like, I really need to work on that with anger because I have a problem with that sometimes, you know, like with other emotions, because I'm really good with fear. Like, I'm really good about me like, nope,
that is
I
so
refuse
cool, though.
To live in that. And I trust that the Holy Spirit will give me that concern. I'd rather say concern than fear about, you know, if there's something like with my kids or
that you need to actually pay attention to.
Yeah. So I do wonder like if we would just submit our emotions more
to Him, like repeatedly. And like you said, you've done it so many times
with fear. I'm not with very fear. Good at the other ones,
but
I kind of was thinking that through, like on my drive over this morning was like, okay, what others, like I need to practice that with some other emotions because there's definitely some other things that I let, you know, take control. I hate it when my emotions take over and then I'm like,
oh. Exactly. It is. It's so frustrating. Yeah. And you probably wouldn't have been where you are if you did let them be your God or your ruler or have control over you.
Yeah. Because I mean, we've seen how fear has crippled
so many. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I was thinking when you were talking about, not everyone has to go overseas. And I've always felt called to mission and adoption and since I was young. But I was driving to Spearfish actually one day and I was like, send me, God, I'm just so ready. Like, just send me. Like, where do you want me to go? Just literally put it out like there and I'll be there. And He, I swear, was like home. And I was like, what? Like, I love the idea of that. He's like, right now, this is where you're called and I can use you best here.
Yeah.
And so like everybody has that space where He's like, I'm calling you here.
Yeah.
But just be obedient and go forth. And
yeah. Cause then you have people that are like, oh, I'm just so bitter about the fact that I didn't get to go. But I'm like, did you ever ask where you were supposed to be? Because you were probably in where you were supposed to be and you just didn't take advantage of it.
Right. And there's so much you can do. And then, so I started living on mission in my home, which I had been trying to do before, but after that, it was like very clear. I was like, okay, this is where I need to live on mission for now. And who knows when it will change. I'll just keep asking.
Yeah. And just be sensitive to the Holy Spirit and where He needs you.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Yeah. Thank you so much, Liza. Yeah. I loved having this conversation with you.
Yeah.
And we will keep praying for you.
Thank you.
As you go back.
Thanks.